Well, today has been a day and a half. We've had the youth conference, and following the theme of young people and yay go us, I have a message about the young people today and how frustrating they are. No. My message is about young people today, young people throughout history, and what that means for us as a church community especially. I have a few main goals, but first, I'm going to tell you what this message is not. First of all, this message is not about bashing older generations. I'm not having that. Second, this is not me excusing some bad behaviour of young people. Not excusing that. And number three, this is not me telling people how to parent their kids. So those three things I'm not doing. And if you feel like I've done them, sorry, but I haven't meant to do that. So that's not on me. No. What this message is, though, I've got three main things that I want to get across. Number one, to demonstrate that complaining about young people is not a new thing. And I also want to demonstrate how this rhetoric can be really harmful for our young people, especially in our church. Number two, I want to shed light on what Scripture has to say about young people and share some stories from the Bible, but also stories from our recent climate that have from young people that have brought about quite a lot of change that I think we can learn from. And three, I want to define ways that we can empower young people in this church and outside as well. So, hope you're ready. Yay. I love it. So fun having young people in this church. I'm just, for a second, so blown away by Drew. And, yeah. Bro, so cool. And Maddie B up here and Alana, just absolute killing it. And it's amazing. So thank you guys for making it such a cool night tonight. So I want to read to you two quotes firstly, both bashing young people. So I think you'll enjoy this. Number one, the children now love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for elders and love chatter in places of exercise. Children are now tyrants, not the servants of their household. They no longer rise when elders enter the room. They contradict their parents, chatter before company, gobble up dainties at the table, cross their legs and tyrannise their teachers. Number two, the world is passing through troublous times. The young people of today think of nothing but themselves. They have no reverence for parents or old age. They are impatient of all restraint. They talk as if they know everything. And what passes for wisdom with us is foolishness with them. As for the girls, they are forward, immodest, and unladylike in speech, behaviour, and dress. First one, Socrates, somewhere between 469 and 399 BC. Second, an extract from a sermon preached by Peter the Hermit in AD 1274. Just putting it out there, this is not new. During my research for this, just trying to pull up more scraps of evidence for why this is not a new problem, us complaining and making jokes about young people. And let me just say, I love making jokes about young people. I love making fun of my generation, but that's not really what I'm talking about here. Have fun, whatever. I'm not the PC police, but you know, it's more than that. April 1st, this is 1913. This is an extract from a newspaper in 1913 from America. These strenuous times, when everybody has the mania to attain wealth and position, we no longer have time to reflect with deliberation and to develop our powers of conversation. In these newspaper and periodical days, when everybody can get the news and information which it cost much to collect, almost everybody sits behind the morning sheet or is buried in books or magazines. There is no longer the same need for communicating thought by the spoken word as it was formerly. 1913, guys. And let me also point out that I found an article by the name of someone called Eric Shipton, I believe, somewhere around this period, wrote an article about the dangers of young people reading novels, which is just such a joke because now, you know, you see young people reading and you're like, oh, isn't that lovely? Everyone's on their iPhones and they're reading a book. And this person, Eric, poor Eric, was thinking that novels were the downfall of society. Another extract from a Scotland newspaper in 1951, right after some new bus routes were implemented. Young people are so pampered these days. They have forgotten that there is such a thing as walking, and they make automatically for the buses. The footpaths are getting more thinly populated every year. Unless we do something, the future for walking is very poor indeed. And I'm just thinking, I'm reading this, and I'm like, this is right after bus routes have been implemented, and surely you didn't put the buses there for the kids to go, I'm going to walk. Like, stupid. So why get mad at young people for using the things that we have put there to make life easier? Just a thought. So basically, this is a trend I want to convey to you, that we don't just dislike millennials or Gen Zers, we dislike young people. And this has been going on for a very long time. I want to also define millennial here as 1980s to late 1990s, and Gen Z from 2000 to 2015. And it depends what kind of site you look at, there's multiple different definitions, but in some of them I fit in just at the very tail end of millennial, and for some of them I'm right at the beginning of Gen Z, so that's me. And I think sometimes maybe this has to do with a certain bitterness that older generations have, because they've worked so, so hard, and then they see young people just come in and be like, this kind of entitlement, so I get that. And sometimes maybe there's a bit of envy, and, you know, because we've had it tougher and, no, you don't get it. So that's where I'm going to kind of illustrate this point with one of my favourite skits from Monty Python. Dad and I have kind of decided that we should definitely allude to Monty Python just as much any time we can. This is a skit that I've decided to show physically today because of copyright issues. So it's basically a Broadway production. They've had a week's notice and 3.5 run-throughs. I present to you, ladies and gentlemen, The Four Yorkshiremen.
Hi, nothing like a glass of old Chateau d'Eclair. Are you Governor?
You're right there, Obadiah. Who'd have thought 30 years ago we'd all be sitting here drinking Chateau Le Chassillier wine?
Aye, in them days we'd have been glad to have the price of a cup of tea.
Aye, a cold cup of tea.
Without milk or sugar.
Or tea.
In a filthy crap cup.
We never used to have a cup. We used to have to drink out of a rolled up newspaper.
The best thing we could have managed was sucking out of an old damp rag.
But you know, we were happy in those days. We were poor.
Aye, because we were poor, my old dad used to say to me, money doesn't buy you happiness.
He was right. I was happier then and I had nothing. We used to live in this tiny house with a great big hole in the roof.
A house? You're lucky to have a house. We used to live in one room, all 126 of us, no furniture, half the floor was missing, and we were huddled in the corner for fear of falling out.
You were lucky to have a room. We used to have to live in a corridor.
Oh, we used to dream of living in a corridor. Would have been a palace to us. We used to live in an old water tank on a rubbish tip. We got woken up every morning by having a load of rotting fish dumped in us. House?
Well, when I say house, it was only a hole in the ground covered by a piece of tarpaulin, but it was a house to us.
We were evicted from our hole in the ground. We had to go live in the lake.
You were lucky to have a lake. There were 160 of us living in a small shoebox in the middle of the road.
Cardboard box?
Hey.
You were lucky. We lived for 3 months in a brown paper bag in a septic tank. We used to have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, clean the bag, eat a crust of stale bread, go to work down mill for 14 hours a day, week in, week out. When we got home, our dad would thrash us to sleep with his belt.
Aye.
Luxury. We used to have to get up out of the lake, 3 o'clock in the morning, clean the lake, eat a hot handful of gravel, go to work at the mill every day for a tuppence a month, come home, and when we get home, we'd be lucky. Dad would beat us with a broken bottle.
Well, we had it tough. We used to get up out of the shoebox at 12 o'clock at night and lick the road clean with our tongues. We had half a handful of cold gravel and worked 24 hours a day at the mill for 4 pence every 6 years. And when we got home, our dad would slice us in two with a bread knife.
Right. I had to get up in the morning at 10 o'clock at night. Half an hour before I went to bed. Drink a cup of sulfuric acid. Work 29 hours a day down mill and pay mill owner for permission to come to work. And when we got home, our dad and our mother would kill us and dance about on our graves singing hallelujah.
But you try and tell the young people today that and they won't believe you.
Why?
Thank you, guys. Oh, that was great. Thank you, guys. So basically, you know, that's just a funny way of conveying this is not a new issue, and we get it. It's hard. A lot of older generations have just really had to tough it to provide us the things that we do have now, and we see that, and we are very, very grateful for it. I want to remind us, though, that the video that I showed before I even got up was a lot of harmful rhetoric. It's a lot of stuff, you know, snowflakes, and sometimes we get it, snowflakes, lazy, entitled, self-absorbed, and we can be all of those things, but let's not forget every generation can be those things. It is not just young people. I want to remind us that in Proverbs 18:21, it says that the power of life and death is in the tongue. And this goes for all aspects of life, but I want to bring it up now for this message about young people is that we have so much power, especially older generations, to speak either life into our young people or death and destruction into our people. And so we got to be better than this media coverage. And I know that, you know, young, like I said before, young people can be all of those things, but we need to encourage them that they are and can be more than that. We need to watch how we speak about our young people, especially in church communities. And I'm not saying don't challenge people. And we don't want to just build them up. But we want to... Oh, sorry, I lost my point. What I mean is younger people also notice how you speak about them. And this can become a cycle so that when younger people grow up, they're now in your position. And what are they going to do? They're going to do the exact same thing. They're going to talk down. They're going to patronize. So if we treat our young people with respect and dignity, we challenge them with love, they are more likely to do the same thing for the next generation. And I think that that is a much healthier cycle that we do want to be in. And we have so, so much to learn from each other. I want us to turn to 1 Timothy 4:12. I love the Bible. We're going to look at the Bible for what it says about young people. This is a wonderful letter written by Paul. It offers practical and pastoral advice from, you know, the aging apostle Paul to the younger pastor Timothy, who is working at a church in Ephesus. Paul had met Timothy about a decade prior to this letter. And he recognized his capabilities and potential as a young person, Paul did, and recruited Timothy to travel with him. This took place after a really sharp dispute that I actually talked about in my last message about conflict, when Paul and Barnabas split up because of a conflict that they had regarding circumcision and regarding whether Timothy should go and preach or not. So 1 Timothy 4:12 says, "Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity." So I think this is a beautiful, beautiful passage written from an older man, wise old man who's just come out of prison, I believe, at this stage, and writing to a young person that is really, really new in this environment. And this is such crucial wisdom. And I think that this isn't just applying to young people. I think anyone can take this on board. We need to make sure that we don't look down on our young people, but we lift them up. Young people as well. If we aren't being lifted up, I'm not saying in this church, but in general, if we aren't being lifted up, we need to set an example. That's what this says. We need to set an example. Let's conduct ourselves in love, faith, and in purity. My next story from the Bible, David and Goliath, is a good one. When this happens, David is about 17 years old, roughly. And interestingly enough, I used to listen to this story on cassette as a little girl. I would have been about 6 or 7, and I'd go to bed and I had these little Bible stories on cassette. I see people nodding like, yeah, I remember that. You know, back when I was young, we had cassettes. Now you just have Spotify. But and I would get up, I would put it in, close it, listen to Esther, and then get up again when it clicked and turn it around, and then I'd listen to David. And I thought this was such a cool story because he's such a young guy. He gets just a few stones and, you know, fully just yeets it at Goliath. And he defeats Goliath, and then it goes on to say that he cuts off his head. Well, I'm not saying that we should cut off people's heads, but what I'm saying is that young people have so much power, and a lot of times we are underestimated. A lot of people underestimated David, and look what he did. Another story from John 6. I didn't realize this until I was researching for this message, but in Jesus feeding the 5,000, that story, it's actually a young boy's food that is handed to Jesus. I read the story again and I realized a bunch of Jesus's peoples were like, yo, this isn't gonna work, I don't have any food, or, you know, that boy's got something, but it's not gonna work. But this little boy is like, we'll give it a go, and look what happened. It's that childlike faith that little boy, he doesn't even have a name in the story, I wish he did. But, you know, this little boy is like, all right, okay, this is what I've got, and see what you can do. And Jesus fed the 5,000. He chose to give to Jesus his 5 loaves and 2 fish because of his childlike faith. And he didn't listen to the older people that were thinking, you know, with their imminent frame, it's not going to work. This isn't going to happen. Even though they've seen Jesus work wonders from time and time and time again, it's that childlike faith that is so important. This one's interesting as well. Joseph, he was only about 17 when sold into slavery. And I think it's just really interesting. A lot of these stories, the Bible stories, they're really, really young people going through really difficult things. And even though, you know, the lifespan back then is not really the same expectancy, that is what brings me to the next point. Last but not least, Jesus, he would have been maybe around 30 years old at, you know, just before the time of his resurrection, death and resurrection. And if he would have been alive now, he would have been probably classed as a millennial, which I find interesting, millennial Jesus. I can just imagine, can you imagine for a second that Jesus is alive now, he's 30 years old, he's going out, flipping tables, being, you know, giving the vulnerable and the marginalized power and agency, and saying to the people with power and agency, hey guys, this isn't how we should be doing things. Can you imagine how we would be thinking about him, even in a church? Can you think, oh, you know, some crazy hippie, I don't know, what are you doing? And in the Bible, we see this as well, this same speech from the Pharisees and people that weren't too keen on him because he was a younger guy that had very interesting and different teachings and views. Classic young people, always on their phones. I also want to share the story of an incredible young lady who I am really, really inspired by. Her name is Greta Thunberg. You might have heard her name. There's a photo that's going to be shown on the screen. You might recognize her. She, about 8 months ago, skipped school to sit outside Parliament in Sweden to put pressure on the government to make decisions to limit climate change. She was only 15 years old, and she started a global movement, and one that we've seen the repercussions of in Melbourne. And I don't share this story to be polarizing. I know not everyone agrees with the school strikes and everything, and that's fine. It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I personally find it very, very inspiring that we have young people in our city that are fighting for a cause and that are passionate about something because of another young lady that started something because she was passionate about something. Incredible. Incredible young lady. When I was younger, and during the time when we didn't know whether Mayu or Andrew were going to be executed, I was about 15, and I started writing and visiting MPs. And I realised during that stage that older people in positions of power want to know what younger people think, and they want to hear our opinions about things. But I find too often young people don't actually know that. So I want to say to the young people and to everyone, but to the young people, please, if you are passionate about something and you want to bring about change, you can, and people will listen to you. An example of this also in my life, another one has been when I was younger than that, maybe about 12 or 13, there were a few shops that I loved to shop at, namely Supre and Cotton On. Yeah, I know. Supre, it's still around, I think. And I, you know, being someone, a really young person who on one hand really wanted to fit in, and really wanted to look, I wanted to wear the clothes that were acceptable to my friends, I wanted to look cool or whatever, but then on the other hand, I found out that Supre and Cotton On were using human trafficking and child slavery to make their clothes. And so I was pulled between the side of me that wanted to be, as a lot of young people and people in general, just want to belong and be included, that side of me, and the other side of me that was like, no, this is wrong, because there are children my age that are being exploited for me to make, for me to buy these clothes and to feel included. And so eventually I made the decision that I wasn't going to buy into that. And I got up on my soapbox, as I often do, and said to my friends, hey, this is what's happening. I'm not shopping at Supre or Cotton On anymore, and I don't think you guys should either. And so I kind of bullied them into boycotting those two. And then I'm not saying that I started this movement, because I didn't, but lots of people caught on to this, not just with those two brands, but for several other brands. And now I know that both of those brands have completely reinvigorated the way that they do things. And I'm saying this again to reiterate the point that young people, we have a lot of power and we have a lot of agency, and sometimes we just don't know that. So I'm reiterating that to everyone, but especially the young people today. I want to also go through another list of how we can empower our young people. This is for everybody. Number one, young people, we need our beliefs to be challenged with love and openness and not harsh judgment. We want you to come along and to, I mean, I personally want people to come along and poke holes in my argument. I feel like that is how I feel connection with people. Last year, when I was studying theology, we had an assignment where we had to find a mentor, or as they called it, an anamkara, which is a Celtic saying for soul friend. It comes from Celtic spirituality. And this is a soul friend that challenges you, who's typically older than you, who's wiser than you, who is coming to be a friend to your soul, which means not just, you know, saying nice things and encouraging you, but saying the things that are going to make you a better person, pushing you to be a better person. So I found my anamkara, who's someone, a beautiful woman in this congregation, and she is someone who pushes and challenges me. She's an older lady. She's not as in older lady, but she is older than me, wiser than me, and gets me, and she is my soul friend. And so I encourage young people, if you can find someone that you trust who knows you, to allow them to push you, please find that. And if you are an older person, I know that you have wisdom and you have things to share. Find some young people that you can push with love and kindness, and people you can challenge with openness and not harsh judgment. Number two, older generations, younger generations, we want to hear your stories, the good and the bad. We want you to tell your stories. We want to hear. I know I can't speak on behalf of everyone, but I love when older generations share stories with me, because sometimes it feels like we do get disconnected. Like, I love sitting with my granddad and my nana and asking them about their times during the Troubles in Northern Ireland, because it's something so far out of my sphere of reference. I want to know, I want to try and understand, because that helps me grow empathy for them. And when they hear my stories about what it's like to grow up now, they have empathy for me. So it's about mutual learning from each other. How do you see things? How do you see things? Say there's, you know, something going on in the world globally. Two people from different generations are going to see that very, very differently. How do you perceive this? I want to know. Number three, we need to know that doubts are okay and healthy to have, especially in a church environment. We need to know as young people that it's okay to doubt things. It's all right. It's not a lack of faith. We are working our way around things, especially if we've grown up in a Christian environment. We need to know that we don't lack faith if we're doubting. For mistakes are not the end. We need you to reassure us that we all make mistakes. We need you to reassure us that's not the end and how we can learn from it. Help us get back up on our feet. Tell us it's all right. You know, it might have a lot of consequences. Things often do, mistakes often do, but it is not the end. Five, we need honesty. It's okay not to have the answers to things. Let's go find them together. I remember as a kid, I would ask questions, and you know, your parents always know everything, and that's great. But I remember for the first time, I can't even remember what the question was, but I asked an adult something, and they just said, "I don't know. Let's go find out." And I was like, Why don't you know? You know, I thought adults know everything. And I thought it was really refreshing. And I love, the older I've gotten, I've realized that we're all really, really flawed people that don't know everything. And I find it so refreshing when people say, "I don't know. Let's go find out." Don't just leave it at "I don't know." Let's go find out together. Over the past few weeks, I've also been asking some youth and young people what they would like older generations to know. And there were two things that just came up with almost every single young person that I talked to. So I'm going to share those two things with you. Number one, this came up several times, but one young man described it very, very eloquently. "You know what it's like to be teenagers, but you don't know what it's like to be a teenager now." I thought that was really interesting. You know what it's like to be teenagers. Everybody here, unless you're still a teenager, I guess, knows what it's like to be a teenager. But do you know what it's like to be a teenager now? Don't know. But because of things like technology and globalization, things have changed quite a lot. And like I said, things have not changed, but things have really, really changed. I was only a teenager like yesterday, and things have already changed so much. Like with Paris and with Trinity, Paris is a teenager, Trinity's becoming a teenager, and things have already changed so much. Like I said, I was listening to cassette tapes, and now Trinity has Spotify, you know, all that kind of thing. I know what it's like to be a teenager, but I don't know what it's like to be a teenager becoming a teenager now. I don't know what it's like to be 13, 14. Even on a biological and a developmental level, the onset of puberty is different. In past generations, the onset of puberty has been roughly 14, 15 for girls. Now, about 10 or 11. So I'm not saying any of this to, you know, invoke fear or say how to parent or whatever, but what I'm saying is these things are changing. So if we are treating young people like how we were treated when we were teenagers, it's not necessarily going to work because things have changed. The other thing that young people want older people to know is similar to a point I said before, let my faith be my own. Now, I grew up in a Christian household, as you guys know. And sometimes, to be completely honest with you guys, that has felt like a fishbowl. And it's been interesting. But I'll share some of my story now. I grew up in a Christian household. I learned how to speak in tongues when I was 3 years old. I led Paris to the Lord when I was 7 in a hotel in Texas. And I know. And a lot of my childhood was quite Pentecostal, very shasakarabarada, very full on. And that was what I grew up with. And I love all of that. But I didn't realize till later that maybe I wasn't doing it because I actually believed in it, but because that's what I was brought up with. That wasn't what was in front of me, and that was what was comfortable. So during my teenage years, I was coming to church, I was coming to youth. A lot of it was quite social for me. And, you know, I would tithe and I would pray and I would do all of these things. I would read the Bible, but I didn't feel ever like my faith was actually my own. And I've had very candid conversations with my parents about this, don't worry. And they have always been very, very supportive. I'm very grateful. And basically, it came to a point where even in the last few years, I decided, hey, I know a lot about Christianity. I know a lot about my faith, but I also don't know anything. I don't know anything for myself, what I really believe and why I really believe it. So last year, I decided to study theology. And I got to tell you, that's like the best thing I've ever done for my faith. And now I know why young people have been saying, let my faith be my own. It's because you will hold on to something so much more when you have worked hours and hours to figure it out. When your Jenga tower has come crashing down, all the things that you've believed in, and it's just not fitting anymore. So you work and you read and you study until it's built back up and you have a solid foundation. You're going to hold on to that so much more than if your parents just go, here's one I made for you. You know, you're going to hold on to that so much more. And trust me, I do, because I worked so hard to figure out what I believe in. And it's something that I'm happy to stand by now. Yay. Yeah. So those two things that the young people in this church want everyone to know is, you might know what it's like to be a teenager, but do you know what it's like to be a teenager now? Ask us, talk to us about it, and we want to talk to you. Boy, do we want to learn from you. And second, let our faith be our own. And I know this is hard because you just want the best for your kids. Everything is out of love. And you just want best for young people. It isn't just for parents. You just want the best for young people. Don't want them to get hurt. But sometimes, yeah, we've got to figure it out on our own. It's hard, but you can help us and we want you to help us. So I'm going to finish up with this quote by Henry Nouwen. Young people are not the future, but the now of God. We aren't the next generation. We are this generation. And we need everybody's support and guidance. Maybe it's time that we asked young people a little bit less what they want to be when they grow up, but what they want to be now. Because we have a lot that we can do now. We have a lot of power, a lot of agency, and we can't do it without any generation. We all need to work together. So young people, what do you want to be now? What do you want to be now? Amen. Amen.